Back to My Garden, episode 42.
Welcome to Back to My Garden. Discover your passion for gardening. Here's Dave Ledoux.
Are you concerned about toxic chemicals, GMOs, and frankenfood? Don't panic. Grow organic. Discover my new resource for organic gardening. Go to www.backtomygarden.com/myorganic. Do you love homegrown tomatoes? Free report reveals the 5 dirt cheap tools I use to grow 22 types of heirloom tomatoes, including my secret soil booster. Download your copy for free today at www.backtomygarden.com/free report. Well, good morning, good afternoon, or good evening, depending on where you are in the world when you listen to this. I'm Dave Ledoux, and welcome to another edition of Back to My Garden. Tremendous guest with us today. He's been featured on Good Morning Britain. He's been showcased as one of 25 Sussex gardens to visit in Sussex Life magazine. He's raised tens of thousands of pounds for charities. He's had over 9,000 visitors visit his exquisite gardens just in the last 4 years, and he's won too many awards to even mention. It's a real thrill to have him on the show today. I want to welcome from Bishop Stone in East Sussex, England, Mr. Jeff Stonebanks. Jeff, welcome.
Hi, good afternoon. How are you doing?
Great. I'm glad you're here. And that was just a brief overview and an introduction. I want to hear your story, and I know our listeners want to get to know you as well. Jeff, take a minute or two and just share with us a little bit about your background and how did you get into gardening?
Okay, well, I mean, gardening's always been something that I've enjoyed, but having a sort of high-powered career with Royal Mail for 30 years in the UK, I didn't really have a lot of time to do it. So when I got the chance to take early retirement 10 years ago, we decided to move down to the South Coast. I'd hoped to create a sort of really nice cottage garden. But, I mean, at the end of the day, nobody was more surprised than me to find that we ended up buying a house that faces the sea, which in itself brings a lot of challenges to anybody that wants to create a nice garden. And it's been quite interesting. And in some ways, it's been beneficial to have those challenges because from what other people say to me, I've managed to create something that's quite unique, bearing in mind the environment in which I live. So it's just really been an extension of wanting to garden through the years, but not having the time to do it. Now having all the time to do it and really in many ways becoming totally obsessed with it.
Now, Jeff, you have an incredible property. I'm going to put all of the links to your blog on the website at Back to My Garden. Now, we have a lot of listeners who are driving in their cars listening to us. So keep both hands on the wheels. Follow Jeff on Twitter at Driftwood by Sea and make sure you check out his incredible website. It is what we're doing here today, folks, is a visual treat because he's right on the ocean. It's at www.driftwoodbysea.co.uk. And Jeff, I want to know the early days of your garden. It must have been almost daunting to see a property like that so close to what most people think is paradise. Did you bite off more than you could chew? Was there trepidation or any kind of hesitation? What were those first days like?
I mean, to be honest, I'd looked at 140 houses along the south coast of the UK before we picked on this one. And ironically, it was one of the nicest gardens that we'd seen. However, I now look back at those images that I took sort of 10 years ago and think, what on earth was I thinking about? It just wasn't a particularly nice garden, but that obviously says something for the other 139 houses. But, I mean, the old lady that had the house, she had been a very keen gardener with her husband who just recently died, and she desperately wanted to sell the house to somebody that had an interest in garden. Unfortunately, she was quite old and moved away, so she's never been able to come back and see what I've actually ended up with. I'm pretty sure she'd be quite impressed because there are still probably about 6 or 7 of the original plants that she had in the garden, plus the trees that are still there. And so it's made quite a major journey over those 10 years.
Speaking of major journey, I know you spent a lot of your life in London. Do you ever have visitors from London come to visit your property? I know it's a bit of a drive. What is their reaction like as a city dweller coming out to your place?
I mean, in terms of, there's two aspects to that. There's friends that come, and yes, they love it. But more importantly, because I open my garden to the public, each year. It's amazing over the years that the garden has become better known. For example, a couple of weeks ago, I opened for some of your listeners may be familiar with the Yellow Book, which is the Bible to gardening visiting in the UK. And I opened for the National Garden Scheme a couple of Sundays ago. And I was amazed. I had people come from Essex, which is the other side of London. I had people come from Surrey, which is just south of London. I had people come from the west, travelling quite long distances that, to be honest, I wouldn't travel those distances to see a garden, but they'd heard about the garden and they were keen to see it. And I've yet to have anybody visit it that has not enjoyed it. They may not have liked it. It may not have been their cup of tea, but they can appreciate the effort that's gone into creating it, particularly when they look at what's in it and the environment that it's growing in.
Now, our listeners, Jeff, they're probably thinking, okay, this Jeff Stonebanks fella is out of my league. I want everyone to know you just didn't roll out of bed one day as a master gardener. What was your earliest garden as an adult like?
I mean, the first house I owned was a very, very small house in North London, and the garden was a postage stamp. It literally was about 6 foot by 6 foot. And I've got no gardening experience at all. I've got no qualifications, no expertise. I do have relatives that enjoyed gardening, but equally they too had no expertise. My father and his sister both enjoyed gardening. And I suppose my mother says I've often inherited some of those traits from them. And indeed, both of them, who are no longer with us, had nice gardens. And my garden now has plants that they owned and objects that they had in their gardens. So it's sort of come full circle. And I've got pictures of them both in my summer house. So they're really part of the garden as well.
I love that about perennials, is they just live on as memories, mementos of our past.
Yeah, I mean, one in particular, my aunt, she died in 2004, so 10 years ago, but she planted some lilies in a green ceramic pot. And when she died, I had the pot. I've never replanted them, just fed them every year. And every year I drag this pot out from behind the studio, put it in the centre of the garden, and it produces these magnificent orange and red lilies. And so she's there in the garden every year. They die down, right, just shove the pot back behind the studio and out they come again the following year. So there's a lot of life within the garden that's personal and has certain reminiscences for me.
I'm kind of debating here how much of your wisdom you're going to share today, because I know you know a lot of things that you might even take them for granted, things like feeding the soil, and you've learned so much. Can you put it in terms that the rookies and beginners would understand how vitally important it is to nutrient the soil?
Well, it is. But, I mean, people visit my garden, and I'm on chalk because I'm so close to the sea. And people all say to me, well, you must have done so much to prepare the ground for this. And I have to be totally honest and say, because I was a novice, I didn't really know that much about it. So, no, I have done nothing to improve the soil throughout the garden. However, I do use a well-known brand of garden feed, and I use it meticulously and religiously throughout the season. And, I mean, people come and see the garden and see the plants in it and are amazed that they say, that's so much bigger than that particular plant in my garden. I say, well, do you use this product? No. I say, well, there's your answer. Look after the plants, feed them and nurture them, and they will become stars in their own right.
Wow, when you said chalk, I cringed a little bit, but I guess if you don't know, you don't know.
No, I mean, as I say, people are quite shocked and think that I must have done so much to remove some of the soil, put some topsoil on. But my naivety when I created the garden, no, I didn't do anything. And now I just think, well, why do I need to? Because I've managed to create what I've created using these products annually to feed them. So why go back and start again?
Jeff, if you could take a minute, you have a heart for giving. You have people come and tour your beautiful gardens, but you've also raised a considerable amount of money for charity. Can you speak on that a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, at the time my dad died in 2007, we have an organization in England called Macmillan Cancer Support, and they were very helpful to my mum and my family. So when I first started to open the garden, I wanted to raise money for a particular charity. So the garden openings that I've had, and I've opened 75 times in 4 years. The National Garden Scheme is quite unique. They have their own charities. Ironically, Macmillan is one of them. But for all the other charities, I raise money for Macmillan. And there's a new cancer centre being built close to us in Brighton. And I've raised £20,000 for that particular cancer centre through the garden openings and a further £26,000 for other charities. So over 4 years, that's £46,000 from 10,000 visitors. So, yeah, it's quite phenomenal.
First of all, congratulations. That's amazing. And your impact now, you just told your story and probably hundreds or thousands of people will realize, you know, they have a little garden on a patio or a balcony. It's so much more. It's so important to tell your story because it might inspire some people to do something similar.
Well, yeah, again, for Macmillan, the last 4 years, 3 years, I've organised a garden trail along the coast from Brighton to Eastbourne, a stretch of about 20 miles. And this year we had 31 gardens opened on that trail for people to visit. And many of those people, this year, for example, of those 21, about 9 of those gardens had never, ever opened to the public before. And people are absolutely scared to death at the prospect of doing it. But my experiences have always been the same, that if you can persuade that person to do it, and they do it, they've got the bug, because the thing gets so taken up with them that they enjoy it so much. People very rarely go and visit somebody else's garden and say it's not particularly nice. 9 times out of 10, they will visit the garden and say how lovely it is. And the people then feel quite proud and pleased and I want to do it again. And at the end of the day, there's an extra added benefit that they're raising money for charity as well.
Nice. You know, Jeff, we have a listener in Glasgow, Scotland, and he emailed me. He says, the favorite part of listening to these episodes are when expert gardeners have almost a confessional moment and share a catastrophic mistake or something that went horribly wrong in their own gardens. I guess it connects us on a level because we love mistakes. Do you ever have anything go wrong in your garden in the past couple of years that you could share?
Well, I mean, initially, when I moved from London, in my naivety, I had to have 2 removal vans. I had a van to bring the house and a van to bring the garden. And the lady that bought my house in London, when she first viewed it, she said, oh, what a beautiful garden. I said, yeah, but don't look at the garden. There will be nothing in it. And as long as you understand that and want to buy the house, fair enough. So the removal van brought the whole garden, which was about 150 pots, and I dug things up. And, of course, they'd all been used to living in a nice environment, reasonably sheltered in London. I brought them all here to this very exposed site facing the sea and was quite despondent to find that half the stuff died within the first winter because of the salt-laden winds. So that was a hard lesson to learn, and it's certainly given me sort of hope for the future when you consider what some of the things I did manage to save have got through it all. But, yeah, a big mistake, bringing a central city garden with you to the coast. No hope of half of it surviving.
That's incredible. 150 pots. My friend Heather has 3 pots on her balcony, and that's great. I can't even imagine that. Must have been a huge task.
Yeah, it was. I mean, in the end, the removal van, they couldn't get it all in. And fortunately, the lady who bought the house said, well, don't worry, you can leave what they can't get in the garage and they can come back and collect it. So it was one removal van and a bit to get it all here. But yeah.
Now's the time in the show when we try to translate the beautiful visual images of your garden on your blog onto audio. Can you try to describe for our listeners what your current garden is like this season?
Yeah, the easiest way to do that, really, because when I promote my garden in the National Garden Scheme Yellow Book, you've just got to try and write a few words that, again, can describe to people without seeing it what it's like. So I'm going to crib what I've actually used for the book for this year. So the words in the book go: my garden is an exuberant yet immaculate seaside garden. It's only 112 foot by 40 foot. It's split into several garden rooms. It has an eclectic palette, creating a layered tapestry of coloured planting which fully embraces its location, beautifully integrating wooden and rusted metal features with the landscape. It's dense, heavy planting, and there's over 500, with no lawn, no exposed soil, create an illusion of a much bigger garden. So I think that just about sums it up.
Wow. So that 4,000 plus square feet, all of it is planted.
Yep, there's no spare room at all.
Let's talk. I know you had a rather strange winter last year. Did everything do well?
Well, we did. I mean, it's probably the mildest winter we've had since we've lived here. Having said that, that mild in temperature, but ferocious in terms of the wind and the rain. And that really is the thing that damages the garden more than anything else. Indeed, only a couple of weeks ago, Hurricane Bertha hit UK, and because we get all the wind and that off the from the Atlantic up the Channel, I had quite a lot of things that were damaged, some beyond repair. And I've had to do quite a bit of jiggling around and replanting things and moving things in the last week as we're open at the weekend for an local art festival. And we've got 16 different artists displaying their work in the garden. So the garden needs to look good. It is difficult with the weather and that, yeah.
Incredible. Now, this year, what has done well and has anything frustrated you or surprised you?
I mean, I've got to be honest, most things look reasonably good and seem to have done well. And I think that is because the winter was so mild. Despite the wind and the rain, it was incredibly mild. And so most things have done well, to be honest. The one thing this year that has driven me around the bend is snails and slugs. Because it was so wet in the early part of the year, they thrived. Ordinarily, I don't suffer with snails and slugs at all because I don't, as I say, have any exposed soil. All my surfaces are sort of grey slate or Cambrian stone or solid patios. All my pots have gravel across the top. So there are no surfaces that are attractive to snails. But this year, something's gone desperately wrong because there are hundreds of the damn things and they've driven me mad. So that's been the most frustrating thing this year.
War on snails. What sort of plants are you growing this year that you're really keen on? What makes you proud and what brings joy when you walk out into your garden?
Again, this comes back to family connections. Both my dad and his sister loved fuchsias, and I've got fuchsias that they owned, and I've taken many cuttings. And so one of the most prolific plants I've got in the garden is a fuchsia called Empress of Prussia, that the standard one belonged to my father, and I still have it. And I've got loads of them planted throughout the garden, and they've just gone absolutely ballistic this year, and they look really impressive. And again, it's a connection there. You can look at them and get an instant connection with your family.
Empress of Prussia fuchsia.
Yes.
People love taking notes off the show and then go looking them up in the catalogs, and it's contagious. You want to have something your neighbor doesn't have, so I'm sure that's something unique.
Well, I'm quite lucky. In the UK, there's a large seed company that uses a number of gardens throughout the country as their trial sites. And I'm very lucky that my garden is one of the trial sites for this large UK company. And they send me lots of different plants every year that are on trial. And so many of the visitors that come to the garden are quite enthralled to see some of the plants that aren't yet available on the market. It gives them inspiration to be able to sort of think, well, okay, next year I'm going to try and get that particular product. A couple of ones that we've had this year are some tree lilies some really nice new osteospermums, and they look quite stunning, and it's amazing how well they do.
I have a friend that works at Thompson & Morgan.
That's the very company.
It's a 160-year-old company, older than the country of Canada.
Really, yeah.
It's remarkable. I mean, the British gardening culture is unparalleled in the world. Would you agree?
I think it probably is, to be honest, yes. I mean, my particular garden, as I say, there are so many people, particularly Americans, who come to the UK specifically to visit English gardens. And I'm very fortunate they tend to use the Yellow Book as their guide to be able to look around them. And a number of large groups of up to 20 have been to see my garden, who have come over from the States. And they're quite bowled over with it because my garden really doesn't stack up to anything on a par that you'd find in the US, or I suspect probably Canada, I don't know, because your spaces are so much larger than we have here. And I had a group of Americans come last year who walked around the garden, And the woman who was organising them came back three times because she was just so amazed that you could have such a small garden and have so much in it. It seems so huge, yet in reality it's so small. But there is just so much in it that that captivates people that they spend a long time having a look round.
That's a powerful word, captivated. It's like it distorts reality. Let's take a quick minute to thank our sponsors and then come back and play five quick questions. This episode of Back to My Garden, sponsored by Coffee Royalty. Can you really lose 5, 10, even 20 pounds or more just by switching your coffee or tea? Find out how to drink it for free at www.backtomygarden.com/coffee. Attention garden lovers, do you want to save time, save money, and have your most amazing garden ever? Receive free tips, strategies, and gardening techniques from passionate gardeners from around the world. Join the VIP club for free instantly at www.backtomygarden.com/VIP. I'm gonna have to put a link up. Now, make sure if you're listening, you head over to driftwoodbyc.co.uk and bookmark it and follow Jeff on Twitter at driftwoodbyc. Our time is rolling along quickly here, Jeff, and now is the time in the show when we get to play everybody's favorite game. It's called Five Quick Questions.
Okie doke.
This is when you get to share your wisdom and experience with the novice gardener. Are you ready to play?
Go on then, let's have a go.
Question number one. In your opinion, what do you think stops most new people from trying gardening?
I think people are frightened by it and put off by it and perceive it as a bit of a skilled pastime. And if you don't have the skills, you can't do it. Rubbish. Just get out there, do what you think's right, and you'll be amazed what you can achieve.
Do you remember what the first plant you grew was?
First plant I grew. I mean, it was probably something as a house plant, to be honest, because not only have I got a huge garden, I've got a lot of plants in the garden. I've got about 80 plants in the house as well. So it was, I can't remember what it was, but it would undoubtedly have been something in the house.
That's a good starting point for the rookie.
It is indeed.
Start inside. Question two. What is the best gardening advice that you've ever received?
Well, I've got to be honest, I'm not sure I've ever received any good gardening advice from anybody else because I've never mixed in the circles of gardeners to be able to get that information. I think of late, I would say the best advice has been self-inflicted in that if you want to grow something, particularly in the environments that I live in by the sea, just don't listen to what people say and what the books say. If you want something, buy it, nurture it, look after it, and again, you'll be amazed how well it succeeds.
I love that advice, Jeff. Over in this side of the ocean, the culture is you got to wait for an expert to give you permission.
Oh, rubbish. No, totally against that. Just do it. Go for it yourself.
I love it. Number three, technology helps gardeners. In the old days, we'd go to a library and look up the answer in a book. Now we have the internet. Can you think of one or two good websites that you could recommend for gardeners?
Well, certainly in the UK, and obviously you can access it all over the world, there's the Royal Horticultural's website, brilliant for sort of finding out about plants, where they can be purchased, where they're best to grow, etc. So that website is www.rhs.org.uk. That's www.rhs.org.uk. And then I'm going to be a bit biased here because I sort of published a book on Blurb about my garden and I'm amazed how many people have bought it. And I thought, why would they buy that? But the people that have bought it said, well, they look through it and it's laid out in such a way that the way the garden's been developed over the years. And they said, well, actually, we could do that. We could pinch that. So if people look at my own website on the development page, they again can see what I started with, what I've done in different stages, and perhaps pinch some of those ideas within their own space. So that, as you've already said, is driftwoodbyc.co.uk.
The visual, it's so visually striking, the before, during, and after. It's, you know, that imagination, because, you could think all year and not come up with those ideas.
I know. I mean, my partner's an artist, and you'd think he'd have some imagination, but, I mean, I just say to him, I'm going to do this or I'm going to do that, and he'll think, he just can't picture it. Whereas I can see something, I might see something in a magazine, a picture with it, it's got something within it. I think, I like that idea. And I can instantly visualize what I'm going to do and how I'm going to create it. And then I was just going to find the time, the money and the effort to go out and do it. But yeah, so I do have the ability to be able to visualize what I want and create that that picture in reality.
Question.
But most people have, I think, if they apply themselves to it.
Well, I was just going to say, number four kind of leads into that, is I learn by seeing and then doing, and I love books. Can you recommend a favorite gardening book?
I'm not really a reader of books at all, but I mean, when I was trying to set my garden up, there was nothing out there that related specifically to coastal gardens. And then a friend suddenly presented me with a book. It's only a small, thin book, but it's called Coastal Gardening, and it's by a guy called Julian Slatcher. And I really found that book interesting and useful in terms and the context of the garden space that I've got here.
Coastal Gardening by Julian Slatcher. I will put a link. Incidentally, you have your own unique challenges by being so close to the ocean, right? The salt or the... Is it... does anything like pest grow or any kind of rust or blight?
I mean, the garden when I first moved here had lots of roses in it. And I quite like roses, but they got so badly damaged and that I just got so frustrated with it, I don't grow them now because they got so badly damaged. So, I mean, we do get some pests, but, I mean, they're relatively easy to get rid of with standard products that you can buy at the garden centre.
Okay, very good. Okay. I have a few friends that live out in Portland, Oregon, on the west coast of the United States, and they have such a damp climate near the ocean that they get their own unique brand of pestilence that almost like a fungus.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that does happen at times, but I mean, I usually spend so much time in the garden every day checking things, I can usually catch it before it takes hold.
A question number five is a completely fun one.
Go on, then.
It's, in your opinion, what's the number one thing that you would encourage everyone to try to grow next season?
Well, sort of answering your question and sort of not answering your question, there was a plant that I desperately wanted to own, a gunnera. But people think of a gunnera and think of it as something that you could walk underneath, these huge plants that grow in boggy moorland areas, marshy areas. And I went to a flower show last year and saw these being sold and said to the guy selling them, I've always wanted one of those, but I just don't have the space or the conditions, et cetera, et cetera. He said, well, they'll grow in a pot. I said, you're joking, they'll grow in a pot. Anyway, he convinced me, and I bought one, and it's been in a pot, and it looks, it does need watering two or three times a day in hot weather, but it just adds such drama to the garden. So, again, I think that the thing is, if you've always wanted something, just go out and buy it and try your best for it, and you'll probably be amazed at what you can succeed in doing.
A gunnera.
A gunnera, yes.
I'm going to have to look that one up. You made me think. My wife,
bad family.
Yeah, in the boggy marshlands.
Yeah.
Nobody has those. That'll make you totally unique. That's great. I love it. But the underlying message is, whatever you've been pining for, just go out and get it.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, that's just something I would say to everybody now that says, looks at my garden and says, oh, I'd like to do this or I'd like to do that. Well, just do it. You've got nothing to lose. It'll either sink or swim. And if you look after it, it'll swim.
That was the end of the five quick questions, but I'm going to throw in a bonus one, a sixth. When you go to a garden center, what is your level of self-control like? Do you always come home with something new?
Generally, yes. It'd be a plant or an object, because to me a garden is as much about the objects in it as it is about the plants, because the two work in harmony with each other. I mean, my garden is, as I've said earlier on, it's windswept, so it's very hard to get height. So what I've done to overcome that is I've got lots of rusted metal structures within the garden that give me the height, and then they are complemented by the things that are planted at a lower level. So, yeah, I can't resist something, be it an object or a plant.
I just glanced at the clock. Our time is nearly up. These just not enough time in this podcast to go into depth, but you've got an incredible garden. Everyone listening, please go over to Jeff's site and bookmark it. Share it with your friends on social media. See what he's done for fundraising, the tours. It's something special. Congratulations on all the awards you've won, by the way.
Thank you very much.
Does one come to mind that was a particularly proud moment?
Oh, yes, without question. I mean, there's a national newspaper here that's been running a garden competition for many years. And in 2012, on a whim, to be honest, I decided I'd enter this competition. So I took some photographs of the garden. I did have them nicely framed and sent off with no expectation. And about 6 weeks later, I got a phone call to say, we've had over 1,200 entries and your garden is in the final 20. Well, that in itself just bowled me over. So we're coming to visit. So these judges came and had a look at the garden and they were going to streamline the 20 down to the top final four. And so they went away and about a week later I got another phone call saying, you're in the final four. And I'm just completely gobsmacked. I've got this pokey little garden on the south coast that isn't very big, and it's made the top four in a national gardening competition with a national newspaper. Anyway, I didn't actually win the overall competition, but the fact that I'd got into that final four, and I've got this fabulous blue plaque in the garden to acknowledge it, was a real sort of sense of achievement, real sense of achievement.
Wonderful. Absolutely wonderful. Jeff, we're going to have you back in the new year for another update on your garden. I was wondering if we could let you have the last word today to the listeners, and maybe you could leave everyone with either a pearl of wisdom or a note of encouragement on their gardening adventure.
Well, I think something I've said two or three times already. Be inspired by what you want yourself. Go out and buy what you want. Put it in the garden. Look after it, and it will survive, I promise you.
Fantastic. Jeff, thank you so much for being on the show today.
Thank you very much for having me.